Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North convenience stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Deuce McAllister here with Charlie Long, and they have allowed me to be in the big chair. Steve Geller was going to join me, but I told Steve, man, get out of here, man. I've been preparing for this all day, all week with my partner. Well, I'll put partners, but Mike Haas is already in Seattle, as well as Robert, as well as Jeff. The team left last night. I leave in the morning. So you have me and Charlie for the next 2 hours to give us your radiotherapy. We will try to make it fun. We will try to talk through the sporting world. And then at 7 o'clock, we will get you over to our team for the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup. And hopefully it's a lot of fun. That's what it should be. At 6 o'clock, though, we do have the Brian Kelly show, as well as the LSU Tigers take on Southeastern. The Tulane Green Wave take on the Ole Miss Rebels tomorrow. And so, exciting weekend as always for us. And Charlie, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Deuce. How are you feeling about the Ole Miss Tulane game? I know that we did pick six yesterday, and you know, Bobby and I were the ones that picked Tulane plus the points because it's a big, big point spread. And Steve and Mike were both with the Rebels there. I think it's going to be a really, really fun matchup.
Should be a fun matchup. I mean, I've followed kind of, I don't know if I followed either team closely.
Okay.
When you look at that, the spread, I think it's 11 or 12, I think I was told earlier.
Last I saw it was 12 and a half points.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah, it is.
That's a lot of points. I know Ole Miss, last time you played Tulane, it was a lot closer. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Tulane didn't have their starting quarterback. He was hurt. And that was here at Yeoman Stadium. But now it's up in Oxford. You know, one thing about that game, and I don't know if either team has played at this time, but it is the game kickoff is at 2:30.
Yeah.
2:30, it is going to be hot. Now, it may not be first week of September hot, but it's still going to be pretty warm, and so your depth will be tested. I think it'll be a good game. For Tulane to truly have a chance in that game, they you cannot get overwhelmed by the atmosphere.
Right.
You've got to be able to be in the game in the first half and, you know, all right, We can settle down. We can regroup. We can go out and play our game, because that's the biggest thing, you know, when you're playing in a game like that with sometimes an opponent that may have a couple of better athletes. It's can you withstand that first blow And that'll be the same thing with the Saints going to Seattle. The Saints, you know, you look at the numbers and the matchup. That's a tough matchup for the Saints. That's a tough matchup for Tulane. And you're on the road. And so it'll be intriguing to see how both teams kind of handle that situation. And, you know, we'll get into depth, a little more depth about the Saints matchup as they travel up to Seattle. And I know normally me and Hoss, we will talk about kind of the injury situations for both teams, and we will get into that a little bit as well. But, you know, I want you to give us a call or shoot us a text and just tell us your thoughts on and on what we need to do better as far as each team. And then as we prepare for high school football, I think, you know, we've in Louisiana, we've probably got about, most teams have anywhere between 3 to 4 games, depending on where they are. So you're about a quarter of the way. Are there any exciting matchups that you've seen? You know, I know had a kind of a doubleheader last week in the Dome, and that was one that showcased some of our top teams in the area, or at least in the state here. And I think it was Romo and Edna Carr that both prevail as far as victorious in those matchups. So, you know, pretty good showing.
Ian Ozan and Coach Lou Valden were there for the prep show last week, and they covered Romo taking down U-High. It was a 30-17 game. Romo bounced back from a week one loss that they had to LCA. And so Steve is going to go get to watch his boy play in the battle for the megaphone tonight when Romo plays Shaw. And that's also the game that Ian and Coach Lou are going to be at tonight for tonight's prep show. And then, as you had mentioned, it was a doubleheader. The second game, Carr, the Cougars take down American Heritage in overtime, too. So it was an awesome, awesome matchup that was streamed online. So we got to kind of watch Carr come back from a late deficit, force overtime, and then win in overtime against a national power in American Heritage from Florida.
Yeah, and so I got to ask you, the quarterback for American Heritage is committed to Texas, and have you heard that, I think, going forward, he's not going to play anymore?
No, I haven't heard that.
I've got to confirm that, but that was something that I kind of saw was maybe he is going to focus on not the high school career anymore, but just to get ready for, you know, as he tries to arrive and make a play at the University of Texas. That's where he's committed. And, Bell is the son of the former NBA player. Raj Bell is his father. And so he's a 5-star, one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. And so I know that was one report that was floated out there.
Yeah. I'm seeing now, the Sports Illustrated had this Dia Bell, the 5-star recruit, the Texas commit, his senior season has been ended due to a quote-unquote minor procedure. He'll be out for the rest of 2025. So kind of like what you're mentioning, he's going to get ready for his college career, which is going to be starting, obviously, next year at the University of Texas. But obviously a very talented kid. Carr still with a massive win over American Heritage, because that's two national powers going at it. Like, depending on which ranking you're looking at, typically Carr was around number 15. American Heritage was top 10. And they come to the Superdome, and Carr beats him in OT. I mean, that's a great win for Coach Bryce Brown in that program.
Yeah, you know, regardless of what poll you're looking at, you know, they're going to be skewed depending on who's the voter. But a ton of D1 athletes on both sides of the ball for both teams. And so it was good that the city was able to host that. And, you know, those young men were able to showcase their talent in the Superdome. I'm going to give you the this Sunday, the Saints battle the Seahawks in Seattle. Start your game day at 11 a.m. with Steve Geller and Charlie Long, the Caesars Sportsbook First Take. Then at 1 o'clock, join Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller for the Bud Light Countdown to kickoff. We'll break down the matchup at 3:05 and kick off with Deuce and Hoss with Jeff Nowak on the sideline. Then after the game, sound off with the Cajun Cannon on the point after. If you love football, we've got 10 hours of wall-to-wall black and gold coverage coming your way. Saints Seahawks Sunday on WWL live and on the free Odyssey app. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Saints offense and tell you a little bit of some of the guests we have coming up. We have Dalton Walserman coming up at 4:30, and Jen Mueller will give us the breakdown. She's the Seahawks sideline reporter, and Dalton, we're going to talk a little bit about college football. He's a data analyst and co-host of the PFF college football show. So all of that coming up in a little bit. And like I talked about, we have the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup coming up at 7 and 6 o'clock, the Brian Kelly Show. Deuce McAllister here, me and Charlie Long on Fans in the Pro. You don't have to check your dial. This is WWL fans in the pro, Deuce McAllister holding it down with Charlie Long as my partner Mike Hoss is already in Seattle. So, you know, hey, I told you we got a 2-hour therapy session. So, you know, we're gonna make it a little fun. And hopefully you guys, everyone is listening on the free Odyssey app. And if you can give us a call at 504-350-1746, I'm going to go to the phone line right now to Eric, who is on the Gulf Coast in Biloxi. Eric, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Listen, I've seen the last couple of years where Coach Brian Kelly, he brings a lot of transfer guys. He forget about the guys he recruited mostly. One point I want to make was going to give him a problem this year, in my opinion, is that when you look at Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, you come down with Jefferson and Chase, and then you have league neighbors and Brian Thomas, Calvin Lacy, Kyle Parker, and Chris Hilton Jr. was the heir apparent to the throne for the next two big LSU receivers. And he brings these transfer guys like Brown and Anderson, Nick Anderson, and Aaron. These guys are both the slot receivers. I think Brian Thomas and Kyle Parker are the 50-50 guys, and they're the guys that can stretch the defense. And he's counting on these screens, passes across the middle for these guys to take it to the house. And taking it alone, that's going to cost them.
So, Eric, I guess you're frustrated about the lack of development or the fast tracking. Look, I can understand the frustration with maybe some new guys coming into the fray and having to play and maybe not developing or seeing some of the guys that you have been developing as much. But the college football game has changed tremendously with the transfer portal. And so, Eric, one of the things that a lot more stress and pressure on coaches to kind of win immediately because you don't have maybe the window that you once had as far as, hey, I can develop a player and he still be here. That's the other part of it as well. A lot of those guys that you may have named in today's era, they may not have stayed for 2 years or 3 years and wait their turn. And so that's kind of the game is how it's played now today. And so if you've got a chance to, particularly with a senior or an upper class quarterback, you better get him some weapons, and so you can try to win now. I think that's probably the most critical part that when you look at college football, that's kind of where you're at today.
Deuce, I think it's interesting because, you know, entering the year, a lot of the comments were that this is the deepest wide receiver room that Brian Kelly's ever had in his 35-plus years of coaching. And the one player that Eric had just mentioned that I don't think has gotten going yet, and I think Coach Kelly has also mentioned this, that they need to get him going, is Chris Hilton.
Yep.
I mean, he was one of LSU's representatives at SEC Media Days. He's a, you know, team captain type of guy, a leader on the offense, leader of that wide receiver room, a senior type of guy as well, as you were mentioning about keeping guys in the program. And he's dealt with injury issues in the past. Like, I remember last year was going to be his breakout, but then he's got the foot injury that keeps him out basically for more than half of the season. And he gets back late and gets off to a slow start once he gets back onto the field. But then he shows some flashes late, and he just really hasn't gotten going yet. I don't know how much of that is due to, you know, the injury to Garrett Nussmeier. You know, he's been dealing with that torso issue and how they really haven't been airing it out down the field necessarily early on this season. But that's a guy that I think Coach Kelly and LSU's offensive staff need to get going and want to get going as well.
Yeah, no, I agree, which I think, you know, anytime that you have some of those playmakers that can help you make some plays, you want to give them the football, and particularly a guy that, you know, Chris is a guy that you feel like that can be a difference maker, a guy that can stretch the field for you. But at some point, you have to look and say, hey, is this on the staff or is this on the player? You know, because it's not like he's new in the system. Neither of those guys, when you talking about your quarterback and or top receivers that were returning, you know, it's not like this is their first time playing together. And so that's probably a collective effort where, one, the coach has to call, you know, the opportunities and dial it up. But two, it has to be executed to the level that you kind of have to be able to go out there and do. And so until you have that going, you can see some of the frustration because we can all agree. The talk of this team even coming close to the 19 LSU team, that's not even, you know, it's nowhere, I don't want to say possible, but it hadn't looked that way at all. And so I think it's still taking some time for those guys to come together up front. And then on the outside, you've got to be able to continue to make plays.
Right there with you. As far as the Berrian Brown, he's been someone that LSU brought from the transfer portal from Kentucky.
From Kentucky.
And he's been a weapon. Aaron Anderson's been Mr. Consistency, though. Like, that has been their top dog in the passing attack. It was really last season, but also this season as well, early on. So, you know, it's just different elements, different receivers that bring different aspects to the game. Like, Nick Anderson, the transfer from Oklahoma, is another one that they're probably looking to get going as well. Kind of the more big body possession type of receiver. Whereas, you know, it really depends on what LSU's plan in the passing attack is, given their opponent. And, you know, we'll see what ends up happening tomorrow night at Southeastern, if LSU and Garrett Nussmeier can get any of these guys going.
Yeah, definitely have to get them going. I think, you know, when you have those type of weapons, trying to keep them happy is always challenging as well, just because you have so many of them. Hey, we're going to go ahead and take a break here. We do have Dalton Wasserman coming up. You can find him on X at PFF_Dalton. He is the co-host of the PFF College Football and PFF Data Analyst. He will be coming up a little bit. We're going to break down some of the top college matchups as well as NFL matchups this coming, well, tomorrow, really, and Sunday. So, fans in the pro, Deuce McAllister and Charlie Long.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and sugar-free. First-round picks like watermelon, wild berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Fans in the Pro. Deuce McAllister here with Charlie Long in the booth. Right now we have Dalton Wasserman, PFF data analyst and co-host of the PFF College Football Show. You can find him on X at PFF_Dalton. I appreciate you joining me. How are you doing, sir?
Fantastic. Ready for another great weekend of football.
Definitely ready for a great weekend of football. I want to get your take on a couple of the college games that you're excited about this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you're talking about, some of the biggest games, those three ranked games we have, but the one I'm looking forward to the most is Texas Tech versus Utah. I think it could be the biggest game in the Big 12 this year. You've got Utah's kind of bouncing back from a 5-7 season with a new quarterback, a new offensive coordinator. They've looked really good so far, and Texas Tech brought in a mountain of talent from the transfer portal. I think their defensive line against Utah's offensive line is going to be the matchup of the week.
Well, when you talk about Texas Tech, I think, you know, anytime that it comes up, you have to talk about them off the field, really, you know, them kind of trying to be a big player in the NIL space. And I want to, you know, just get your take on that, if you have any take on that, on some of the things that they've been able, some of the, you know, players that they're in on, and just some of the things that they have, they're kind of trying to put in play out there at Texas Tech. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're good. You're good. No, yeah, no, you're absolutely seeing that, both with the results on the field and with some of the recruiting battles that they're winning. But when you look at this year's team, their defensive line, their front four up front is all star players from other programs. When you talk about David Bailey from Stanford transferring in, one of the best pass rushers in the country, Lee Hunter, the defensive tackle from UCF. And then you even look at the offensive side. I look at a guy like Terrence Carter, the tight end from down there near you guys in Louisiana. He's a really good football player too, and he allows them to win after the catch as well as, you know, with their receiving that they brought in vertically down the field. So they've done just a fantastic job both in the transfer portal, and they're starting to make wins, especially with that NIL, the NIL money happen in the recruiting trail as well.
Yeah, and I got to get your take on it. I know I still want to come back to another game or two for you, but I got to get your take on a team like Notre Dame. Notre Dame still being ranked in the top 25 and 0-2. You know, you have a couple of close losses. I think both of their losses, they are total of less than 4 points. But just talk about that Notre Dame squad, how they are still top 25, and possibly if they can win out, because they do play some ranked opponents, can still work them way their way back into the playoff picture. Just give me your overall thoughts on that squad.
So I think the one thing that's the most concerning for me is that in the trenches, and especially on defense, they just haven't been quite as good as we're used to seeing, right? Their offensive line played a really poor game the first game against Miami. And then defensively, you know, giving up, 68 points through the first 2 weeks, we're just not used to seeing that from Notre Dame, especially as elite as their defense was last year. Obviously, they lost Al Golden to the NFL. He's the defensive coordinator for the Bengals now. But Chris Ash coming in there, he's got to find a way to give up fewer points with this team, because we did not see up other than one game them with as bad a defensive performance last year as they had this year. You know, the USC game, and you could argue the Ohio State game, but even then they figured out in the title game in the second half, played a little bit better. I think the big theme with Notre Dame is the room for error is immediately gone. They have to win the next 10 games. To me, a 9-3 Notre Dame team with their schedule has almost no chance, just about no chance of getting in. Just like they did last year, they're going to have to finish their season with 10 wins just to have a shot.
Dalton, down here there's a ton of buzz about Tulane and their 3-0 start. They take down Northwestern in the first game. They take down Duke and Darian Mensah in the revenge game this past weekend at Yeoman Stadium. And now they have this matchup. They go to Oxford, top 15 ranked Ole Miss. You know, the third Power 4 ranked team that they're going to be playing this upcoming in their non-conference schedule. But Tulane and Coach John Summerall, they've really embraced that challenge. And, you know, what you've seen from Jake Retzlaff, the BYU transfer early on at quarterback, who really got here basically a month and a half ago, but the way that he played against Duke, he was the American Athletic Conference Player of the Week. He now looks really comfortable in what Tulane's trying to do offensively. But granted, it's going to be a tough task going to Oxford and once again playing the top 15 ranked Rebels.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a fascinating football game, especially on the Tulane side, because if they win that, then they're clearly the favorite to make the playoff out of the group of five, as long as, you know, you still have to win the American along the way, and there's some darn good teams there. But if they win this game, they're clearly the favorite. If they lose this game, especially at least if it's not convincingly, then you still feel like they're one of the two or three favorites to come out of the group of five and get a playoff spot. I think the big thing in this game with Retzlaff, you know, I find it interesting. You mentioned that he's only been there about, 6-7 weeks. You know, maybe he doesn't know the whole playbook yet and the entire system, but they've let him go out there and be an athlete, man. He's been one of the 5 or 6 best running quarterbacks in the country so far this year, and his legs have been a big factor in the offense. And I think if they're going to beat Ole Miss, they got to find a way to get turnovers. The secondary, Tulane's secondary has been fantastic so far. If Ole Miss, I think Lane Kiffin, I think he announced that Trinidad Chambliss, last week's starter, is going to be the starter this week with Austin Simmons still hurt. But whether it is Simmons or Chambliss, Tulane, I think if they can get multiple turnovers in this game with a really good secondary, that's when you start to talk about tilting that game in their favor. But Retzlaff's been really good. The defense has been really good. And they're really still a work in progress, and they've played so well so far anyway.
Talking with Dalton Wasserman, he's the PFF data analyst and co-host of the PFF College Football Show. You can find him on X at PFF underscore Dalton. You just talked about Texas Tech as well as Utah and the Tulane Ole Miss game. Give me one more college game top matchup that you're interested in watching, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Saints Seattle matchup.
Oh, boy. How could you not love the Jackson Arnold revenge game with Auburn going to Oklahoma? Both teams, their first SEC game of the year, both undefeated. Everything that's surrounding Jackson Arnold and Auburn and all the hype up there. Going to see John Mateer, who's right now one of the Heisman favorites in Oklahoma. Brent Venables trying to take the next step with that program. I think on and off the field, everything surrounding it, that might be the most fascinating game of the entire weekend. It really is. When you talk about two teams trying to emerge, trying to prove themselves into SEC contention. They're both not all the way there yet, but for both teams to start 1-0 in the SEC, especially against that opponent in those circumstances, I can't wait for Auburn, Oklahoma. And honestly, I know it's all about the two quarterbacks, but, and I know you're going to love this, Deuce. I think the team that runs the football better in that game is going to be the one that wins it.
Dalton, how impressed have you been with John Mateer early on, the transfer from Wazoo, and kind of leading Oklahoma to that big win that they had a couple weeks ago against Michigan? That was really his first test because Michigan's defense over the past few years has always been real stout, but he looked very poised, and obviously he's an older quarterback. But, you know, Mike Dettillier has brought up the Baker-Mayfield comparison, that he plays a lot like Baker, obviously shades of the OU quarterback there. Just wanted to get your thoughts on John Mateer early on. I know that this is another test against a good Auburn defense.
Yeah, he's been solid so far, and I think the encouraging thing if you're Oklahoma is that for their offense, there's more to go. I don't think they have played A-plus offense yet, but you're right, to grind out a big game against Michigan, obviously a very good Michigan defense, and Wink Martindale, to grind that game out really with kind of grittiness and toughness, and he had, I believe it was 19 carries in that game. He was really the heart and soul of the running game, along with a couple of big plays with his arm. John Mateer and the athleticism and what he can do outside the pocket and with his legs, he can really will you to victories, and that's what he did in that game, along with Brent Venables' defense being awesome. But he's solid. I'll be honest with you. I think there's more room to grow in that offense, and I think the entire offense can still play better. I'd give him about a B+ so far, but that's good enough to be undefeated. I think there's a real chance he could get better as the year goes on.
Yeah, that atmosphere in Oklahoma should be electric. You know, just having Auburn. Auburn's going to have to survive that first quarter or so. I mean, or things could get ugly for them. I mean, but it's going to be fascinating. Just those two quarterbacks, how they've been able to carry, you know, kind of both of those teams. And so, it will be a good matchup, a good SEC matchup for you. Dalton, I want to get your take on the, Saints Seattle matchup, this upcoming, Sunday, and just some of the things that the Saints have to be able to do well as they battle the Seahawks, who defensively have played really, really well. And offensively, I think that they're still a work in progress as they try to kind of figure out and truly identify who they want to be as an offensive system.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'll start on the Saints offensive side, where I actually think Spencer Rattler, he hasn't been fantastic, but he hasn't played bad football through 2 weeks either. The thing I'm looking at on a week-to-week basis with the Saints is their offensive line. I'm curious about the guard situation. You got Trevor Penning, I think, is going to be back in there now at left guard. Cesar Ruiz on the other side has really struggled by our metrics at PFF so far this year, and you got two big-time defensive tackles for Seattle that are a real problem on the inside. Leonard Williams, the veteran, and Byron Murphy, the second-year man out of Texas. They've both been really, really good so far. Those are two guys you really have to focus on. And I know offensive linemen always want to get to the second level, but if you let those guys run free around the line of scrimmage, you're going to have a big problem. And then I think on the other side, Seattle, you know, former OC for the Saints, Clint Kubiak, got into his run game against the Saints. They want to run the football. They want to run those outside zone schemes. As you guys saw last year down there in New Orleans, he wants to get into the foundation of the offense. The first week against San Francisco, wasn't able to do that. They lost. Last week, they ran the ball well on Pittsburgh, found a way to win that game, a big win on the road. So I think that's what it comes down to for Kubiak. He always wants to run the football first and not put too much on Sam Darnold early in games.
You know, I wanted to ask you, Dalton, about Sam Darnold. Last year with the Vikings, the 14-3 record, they kind of fell apart a little bit late. And a lot of that was because Darnold was under pressure. And that's been kind of the MO with him, is that when he's in a clean pocket, you know, I want to get your, you know, the PFF numbers about Darnold. It's very similar to another guy like a Jared Goff, where if they have good offensive line play, they're not getting pressured from the opposing defensive line. They're able to just kind of sit back there and pick apart an opposing defense. So for the Saints defensive front, it's a huge game to get after Darnold, make him uncomfortable, and that's how he can kind of maybe take down the Seahawks team, is if that offense isn't clicking on all cylinders.
I think that's absolutely true. If you can get the four-man rush going against that team, and Seattle's got a very, very young offensive line that's still figuring things out in pass protection. You got rookies playing up front, second-year guys playing up front, very, very young line that if you can really mess with them up front and get that pressure on Darnold, especially in obvious passing situations, that's really where you can win. Because one of the big splits we had on Darnold last year, too, this goes with the run game, I believe he was the fifth-best play-action passer that we had in the NFL last season. But when he gets into straight dropback situations, that dips down to a much more average or slightly below average level. So if you can get them in situations where they don't have a two-way go and they don't have those play-action scenarios to work with, and your D-line can just pin their ears back on that young offensive line, then you talk about that scenario you're getting at is, okay, now Darnold's under pressure. He's got to drop back in obvious situations. He's got to really throw it through seven-man coverages. That's the big thing you want to get into. So I think a big thing for the Saints to get into those situations is going to be win early downs and then get into third and eight and make him beat you without the play action and the deception and everything that goes with that.
Dawd, man, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. You can, like I said, you can find him on X at PFF underscore Dalton, as well as the co-host of PFF College Football Show. Thank you so much for joining us here on Fans in a Pro.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys big time. Thank you.
Thanks, Dalton.
Hey, that's some good stuff. You can hear just the data and the numbers and just being able to say, he did say one thing that I was like, I don't know. The Saints third and long defense hadn't been very good the first 2 weeks. And so even if you get him in a third and eight situation, can we get off the field? That's the question for that Saints defense. We're going to take a little break here. Fans in the Pro, Deuce McAllister and Charlie Long. Welcome back to Fans in a Pro. Deuce McAllister here. My partner, co-host Mike Haas, is already in Seattle. Charlie Long is holding it down here in studio with me. Just had an awesome call with Dalton Walserman from PFF. And at 5:25, we have Jen Mueller. She's the Seahawks radio sideline reporter, and you can find her at Jen Talk Sports. We'll break that game down as far as the Saints and Seattle. Talk about some of the guys that have already been ruled out or that are doubtful for both teams. Some pretty significant ones if you're Seattle in the secondary and for the Saints up front in the trenches, whether it's offense and or defense. We'll break that down a little bit more. You can give us a call at 504-350-1746 or check us out on the free Odyssey app. Hey, look, I got to shout out Magazine Pizza. They do a great job of feeding our staff on game day. That's Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine. Dine in or delivery, the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has sandwiches, pasta, wings, and salad. MagazinePizza.com. I'm going to talk to Frank here. I know he has a question. He's giving me a shout from across the river over in Gretna. Frank, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Deuce? I got a question for you, and you, of all people in this country, have the answer. So this is why I'm asking you. About a week or two ago, I'm watching documentaries on YouTube, and I came across a sports documentary called The Wishbone. And it was pretty interesting documentary. You know, it was back in the early 70s, I think it was. UT coach, they were a losing team. He created this formation, and it became a hit. And then you started seeing it, and I saw it in the 80s, you know, in high school and college games, and it just faded away. Why is it not a valuable game of play anymore? Is it the speed? And if somebody decides one day, say LSU lines up in the wishbone, does the defense team know how to defend against it?
Yeah, Frank, thank you. Good question as well. And the wishbone goes back even further than that as far as where it was started, invented, and, you know, really why you don't see it a lot. You know, you talk about the advancement of the passing game with some of the 7-on-7 leagues that you have now in the development of quarterbacks. And it's really the alignment and guys being able to when you run the wishbone, you know, it's normally a wing back. I played in a wishbone offense, the wing T, and, you know, there's a couple different versions of the wishbones, and some teams run it really well. It takes a certain type of lineman. You've got to have a quarterback that can run the football, and, you know, you talked about one of the things that is a little different now. It's the speed. It's the speed of the game. And then the other part of it is my quarterback. You know, will he be able to not only last that game, but will he be available available for 16 games, 17 games. You're talking NFL, college. You still do have some teams. Some of the academies still run it. And I think Georgia Tech was one of the mainstays, but even them, they don't run it as much anymore. So it's just not that kids don't like to play in that set. It's one where they want to air it out, and then the hits on the quarterback. Yeah, there's a couple of different ways defensively that you have to be able to stop the wishbone. It is truly an assignment deal when you talk about being able to stop the veer and some of the other plays that you're going to get, you know, from the wing back, the speed sweep, the inside trap, different things of that nature. You've got to be prepared for it. But hey, if I'm the defensive end, my job may be to crash down every time on the fullback. And if I'm outside linebacker, my job is to hit the quarterback every time. So it becomes a situation where if you're not gaining positive yards every time, normally your quarterback is not good enough to throw the football. So that's kind of where you see a lot of teams kind of shy away from the wishbone, at least running it on the high school and college level. That's probably where you're going to find it more so on the high school and college level. And obviously in the NFL, you don't have any teams that run it. You know, the closest that you're going to get is the triple option look, but it's going to be more so out of the shotgun. And you have variations of it where it's still the dive. Now I have the tight end that's coming over. He's running the flat. And then the third option is the quarterback running and then being able to throw it. So there's still concepts of the wishbone, but not the traditional under center. You know, and I have the fullback, the H back, and the wing back per se. And so now every team is normally in 11, 12 personnel. They're spreading it out, you know, and trying to take advantage of teams through the air. And so, Frank, I appreciate the question, but that's just how the game of football has kind of developed over the years, where, you know, a couple years ago, they didn't even want to hand it to the tailbacks anymore because teams were having so much success throwing the football. The first hour is down. This is Deuce McAllister here on Fans in the Pro with Charlie Long as we set the stage for the Saints and Seahawks kickoff at 3:05 here locally. You got the Bud Light countdown to kickoff where Bobby Hebert and Steve Geller will be handing it off to myself, Mike Haas, and Jeff Newack. Fans in the Pro.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to hour number two. Deuce McAllister here with Charlie Long on Fans in the Pro. My partner, Mike Hoss is out in Seattle, so kind of manning the big chair here so far. And you know, we talked a little college football at 5:25. We will talk to Jen Mueller. She is the Seahawks radio sideline reporter. But I got to give a shout out to the team because we believe in the power of everywhere. You got to listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows you love. That's Dave Coyne, my boy Tommy Tucker, who I just saw, was that 2 weeks ago, last week? My weeks run together. Sorry, Tommy. But I did see you at one of the Rouse's locations. You came out and said hello. Saw Newell a couple weeks. I saw Scoot coming through earlier when I was coming into the building, and the sports talk team, that's Bobby, that's Mike, you know, and Steve. I know he's kind of getting to enjoy his Friday. He would have been filling in or at least helping me out, but I said, man, go ahead, get out of here, Steve. I got it. But you got to check out the content that you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps, and that's our team. And so a lot of great work we try to give you here at WWL. But right now I am going to go to our phone lines, 504-260-1870, and talk to Terry that's over in Marrero. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How's your day?
It's coming along pretty good. Coming along pretty good. What you got for me?
Yes. So I have three concerns the way the Saints have been playing. Number one is the use of Rashid Shaheed and Brandon Cooks. You have two of arguably the fastest wide receiving tandems in the NFL. Look, this isn't a video game, but I haven't seen once yet to utilize them to just the simple go routes to see if they can get, you know, past the defenders. It's something that I would have been interested in seeing. Number two is the flags. I think we gave up three third down conversion off flags against Arizona. And the third concern I have is clock management. I think they're throwing the ball too much. You know, the more you utilize the run effectively, you're going to manage the clock a lot better. And I think if you had more of a seasoned quarterback, then you could afford to throw the ball, you know, past 25 times. But I think Bradley needs to stay at 25 or a little bit lower.
Well, Terry, I appreciate the call, and I will try to comment on those three thoughts and concerns that you have with the Saints offense. And, you know, I don't know if 25 is the number. For me, I don't like probably getting him over 30 to 35 is my sweet spot as far as passing game. And we're still trying to fill out this offense as well. I didn't know if 12 personnel, two tight ends, one tailback, and two receivers would be their base, or 11 personnel, three receivers, one tight end and one tailback in the game. We're still trying to figure out what's their makeup as far as what they play the best at. When you look at this offense, though, one of the things that you must admit is they have been the most effective in a tempo slash hurry up approach. Now, one of the things that does is it gives you a couple more plays, but you've got to be converting on third down, because if you're not converting on third down, you're going to have quick drives. And what I mean by that, it's going to be a lot of three and outs, or it's going to be four plays, five plays. Your defense is back out there. One of the things that we've seen, or you're seeing offensively, is, and if you read some of the stuff that they've talked about as well, even today, they're looking for the explosive play, but if it's not there, find the check down. And I think that's what Spencer Rattler has done a really good job of, knowing where his outlet is and getting them the ball. And so a lot of times that's almost like a rushing attempt. A couple of the passes where Alvin is coming out of the backfield on a swing route, he's got a blocker in front of him. That's just like a sweep. It may end up being a pass for the quarterback, but that's just like a sweep. And I do say that the Saints have, I know it was the first drive, maybe the second play of the game, but I know it was early in that game. There was a play action, because that was one of the things that I thought that they needed to do more of, was have a little bit more play action. It was a play action, and it was a big play up the left sideline to Shaheed. So that's an explosive play. That was a shot play that they tried to say, hey, my guy's going to run by you. If you remember, the interception against the Cardinals in the end zone where it ended up being a flag on the play, that was a shot play. That was one to Shahid. Now, I don't know if he and Rattler were on the same page because it looked like Shahid was fading towards the sideline and the ball ended up inside. But on that play, there was a flag on the other side of the field that ended up bringing it back. Now, when you talk about Brandon Cooks, I don't think that they have used his speed to stretch the field yet. Maybe there was a play that was designed to go to him, but the look wasn't there. So they, you know, went somewhere else with the football. But I was pleased with how they pushed the ball down the field the second game against San Francisco, probably a little bit more than I was the first game. I thought that they allowed Arizona kind of to compress the field on them a little bit. And when you talk about the clock management, there's probably some questionable things right there at the half, where whether I use the timeouts or whether I don't use the timeouts. But outside of that, you know, I don't think that there has been truly any, we'll use the word fumbles on the clock management piece where it felt like that, oh, you wasted 40 seconds, 50 seconds. You know, the only time, like I said, would have been right there at halftime. And, maybe you could have used them prior to you taking over the ball, or at least use them, at least one of them, after you did run the ball in the Arizona game, and possibly even looking at the situation against the 49ers. Charlie, what do you think?
You know, one thing that I want to bring up, though, before we continue with this, is that the kind of play calling as far as the balance between run and pass, it was something that Bobby had brought up with Coach Moore during the coach's show earlier this week on Monday, and Coach Moore had said basically that they made a concerted effort to be more balanced in their offensive play calling. Because week one, like you said, Deuce, you're looking for hopefully 30 to 35 passing attempts for Rattler, as you had said, quote unquote, like the sweet spot for him. In week one, he had 46 passing attempts and they had 22 running attempts. It's obviously not balanced. It's heavily weighed to the passing game. Week two, though, much more close to 50-50, where you had 30 rushes and 34 passing attempts. So it was something that they had obviously worked into the game plan, is being more balanced, giving Alvin Kamara more touches, being able to get the running game established. And then, I mean, you can get a play action game once you get a run game going, but if the defense doesn't think you're going to run the football, what are you really doing here? So, you know, it's something that you're looking to see as the season progresses. Kellen Moore and his offense, you're not really concerned about it because you've seen some good things early on, especially from Spencer Rattler and what he's been able to do in these first 2 weeks, surprising a lot of people, Deuce. We've been talking to different national folks all over the stage. Mark Schlereth, you know, at the forefront, we have him on every Tuesday. And he's like, I watched the tape to get ready for this interview with you guys, and I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised with how Spencer Rattler looked, how poised he was in the pocket against that 49ers defense. Because, yes, the 49ers had some injuries offensively, but defensively, they were pretty good. And he still looked really good against a good 49ers squad. And then, as we had just mentioned, the balance between run and pass was there as well against San Francisco, and you'll need to see that again against Seattle.
Yeah, you'll definitely need to see it. I think one of the things, this will be a true challenge just because you're on the road. You're going to have to use silent count a lot more than you would at home. And then just being able to give him some answers to some of the things, looks that you're going to see. They play kind of a 3-4 defense like the Saints do. So it's always identifying my four down and then being able to work off the two guys that I would presume say, okay, this guy is going to be a hot guy. This guy, you know, normally likes to drop into coverage. One of the things Seattle, they do not do a lot of, is blitz. And so they are able to get pressure with their front four. And I think that's going to be one of the challenges for this Saints offense. And, you know, we'll have Jen Mueller on here shortly when we come back from our break. But I think, you know, who plays for the Saints? I think when, from an offensive line standpoint, yeah, we know Fuaga is dealing with a bad back. We know he's dealing with a knee injury. That probably hurt him the last two drives in this past game. And so now, you know, is he 100%? If not, now you're going to have a new right tackle. You know, you'll probably have you'll have a new left guard because either Trevor Penning will get his first action. Dylan has already been ruled out.
Right.
And so now you're going to be dealing with one of the strengths of Seattle, and that's those defensive tackles. So we'll talk a little bit about the injury situation as well as who's in, who's doubtful for both teams here on Fans in the Pro. Welcome back to Fans and a Pro. Deuce McAllister here and Charlie Long. And we do have Jen Mueller. She is the Seahawks radio sideline reporter. You can find her on X at Jen Talks Sports. And we will talk a little bit about this Seattle Seahawks, New Orleans Saints matchup on Sunday at Lumen Field. Kickoff local time 1:05 up there. Jen, thank you for joining us.
You are welcome. I am always happy to talk football ahead of a big matchup.
Well, definitely a big matchup. I guess the it has to start what kind of, I don't know if we officially know, some of these guys will be kind of downgraded out tomorrow. But right now, who's in, who's out? You know, and that's for both teams, some key injuries that may kind of change the strategy a little bit for both teams. And, you know, let's talk really the Seahawks on what they're dealing with, particularly in their secondary.
Yeah, and really there was, I would say, a couple of surprises for me. Not that I should have been surprised, but to see that Julian Love isn't going to play or is doubtful to play, and we have not had a guy listed as doubtful who has played yet this season, but to have him listed as doubtful was really surprising to me, mostly because I just count on him being so consistent back there and really kind of bringing up the back end of this defense. So Julian Love hasn't practiced all week. It is a hamstring injury that he suffered during the week in practice, and that's, you know, that would be tough in and of itself, but the fact that Devin Witherspoon is still listed as doubtful, that Nick Inanwari is still listed as doubtful this week, that's pretty tough. And then on the offensive side of things, it is running back Zach Charbonnet, who ended up with a toe injury, finished the game in Pittsburgh, but he has not been able to practice this week, so also listed as doubtful. I'm sure some of that will be a game time decision. Devin Witherspoon, for example, worked out on the field in Pittsburgh trying to go. It's an MCL bruise, they said, but he hasn't been able to do very much yet. So, yeah, those are some big injuries for the Seahawks and, you know, leaves them susceptible deep.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you. You know, when you look at it, you know, particularly on the back end of it, how do you kind of protect that, knowing that, hey, I may have two new starters, possibly a third starter, just because of some of the depth that you have that may have to play a lot more, at least a third guy that may have to play a little bit more on the back end. How do you kind of protect that that defense in that essence?
You know, I would actually just say it's the pass rush. Seattle has the highest pressure rate of any team in the league, and they're doing it with the four-man rush. They haven't had to do blitzing, which means you could just get a lot of pressure up front, buy a little bit more time for the secondary. The Seahawks like the guys that are going to be stepping in, and all of them have had significant playing time over the years, whether it's special teams or not. You know, they're not new to the field, but I think you dial up that pass rush just a little bit more, and that certainly helps the guys in the back end.
Yeah, and I would agree with you 100%. You know, just because up front they have been so good, whether you're talking off the edge or at the defensive tackles, and having the Saints having should return. He's questionable right now. Trevor Penning, the left guard, who will make his first game as far as this year is concerned. But also the Saints will be without Chase Young at the defensive end position, who the Saints are still waiting on him to be able to play in. So I just wanted to try to kind of talk about that matchup, the offensive line. Seattle having some young guys, most of those guys, you know, when you look at it, I think, what, three starters on that offensive line is either a rookie or a second in their second year. But, you know, a new system for everybody when you look at Coach Kubiak's offensive system. But just some of the challenges the Saints defensively that they could present for that Seattle offense.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm looking at some of that productivity that you've already gotten across the defensive line, and it is going to be a battle. And you guys know what Kubiak's system looks like. You know that it's wide zone, so I don't think any of that is going to surprise, you know, the Saints defense that had to practice against that, you know, all of last year. I will say that the rookie left guard, who was the Seahawks' first-round pick, Gray Zabel, out of North Dakota State, has not looked fazed by anything. I mean, last week it was 63 snaps against Cam Hayward. Like, it was he looks like a veteran out there. There is nothing that has seemed to fluster him. I get it. It's only 2 weeks of the regular season, but he and Charles Cross work really, really well together. The center is, Gray's former college roommate at North Dakota State. So there's some familiarity there that you wouldn't expect when you point out that three of these guys are either rookies or second-year players. Last week in Pittsburgh, it was a markedly different offense from week one. And I think a lot of that was the offensive line. You can practice that all you want, but to truly get the timing and the spacing and get everything together up front and with that run game, I think it took that week one against the 49ers. It looked so much better last week where you could tell Ken Walker trusted those gaps, trusted those holes a lot more.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, Ken Walker, you know, just him knowing that he's going to get those touches and be able to kind of feel comfortable in that offensive system. And, you know, Charles Cross, guy that I knew his coach going back when he was at high school back in Mississippi, he's done a really nice job. And you talked about just having a former roommate as your NFL teammate. That doesn't happen very often. So he's played really, really well. When you talk about the offensive line, Zabel being able to step right in. And one of the things that I do want to kind of get your opinion on when you talk about one player being able to shine, Byron Murphy, second-year player,
yeah.
It looks like the light has completely gone off. And I know that you have a really good player, you know, in Leonard Williams and, you know, when you talk about right beside him, but just talk about how much more of a playmaker that he's been able to say, hey, I can play this game. You saw flashes last year and you knew probably coming out that he could do it. But just tell us a little bit about what the impact that he can have on a defense and so far that he's had for the Seattle defense.
Yeah, last week was a big week for Byron Murphy. And I don't just mean the productivity, you know, a sack and a half. He only had half a sack all of last year, right? To get a sack and a half against Aaron Rodgers, that was a big deal for him. But it's the splash plays. I mean, you know, that position, it is the true, you know, in the trenches, nobody's paying attention. And Leonard Williams said that Byron Murphy in the run game, you can't teach him anything. Like, he is so good and so elite. He plays a double team better than Leo does, is what he had said this week to the media. So that is high praise. The other thing that Leo said was this: you can start to press if you don't see any stats, even though the entire team has been talking about Byron Murphy's contributions. And Mike McDonald has been very consistent in his praise going back to last year. When you actually show up on the stat sheet, it is an extra boost of confidence. Because now everybody is seeing it, and now you get the validation. And it's not that you were looking outside, but it's just a little bit more of that confidence building. Yep, I can affect the game in a lot of different ways. The teammates love him. I mean, just the way that he plays that position, you can't teach it like that. Like, you have to already have those instincts and those skills. It is really impressive to watch. And to hear guys like Jaron Reed and Leonard Williams pump them up, the vets wouldn't do that if they didn't actually believe it.
Jim, before I ask you about Seattle's offense, I did want to ask you about Mike McDonald, because it felt like when Seattle got hot at the end of last year and they went six of their final eight games, it felt like the defense that McDonald was trying to establish there in his first year really started to get going. And that's kind of carried over into the start of this year with both of their first two matchups. Even though they lost to the 49ers, their defense was excellent in that game. And as we've talked about, it was excellent against the Steelers in week two. So just kind of talk about the culture that McDonald's building there and, you know, how Seattle has kind of embraced him, because a great defensive mind. We know what he accomplished in Baltimore and the defense that he's building already in Seattle.
Yeah, and it truly was impressive. And you are spot on. That is exactly what happened at the end of last season. I would also say it was swapping out some of those pieces. Ernest Jones came in midway through the year. They parted ways with both of their starting linebackers that they started the season with, two of their starting linebackers, excuse me, and they brought in Ernest halfway through the season. After he had gotten a week or two in the system, you could tell that things started to click just across the board for the defense. When it comes to Mike McDonald in general, I think Kellen Moore is the one who unseated him as the youngest head coach in the NFL. When you are in that position, you can be the greatest defensive mind in the world. Every leader has to learn on the job, right? There is a feeling out process of figuring out who you are in that position. And I think we saw that last year with Mike. You know, he adjusted things. He thought you know, practice was going to look one way, and then he switched it up in the middle of the year when he realized he needed to change. So I think what you saw is everything kind of falling into place in those last 5 weeks. And then in the off season, Mike knowing exactly who he is, everything has slowed down. The thing that changed most on this defense in the off season is how freaking loud they are at practice. These guys do not stop talking, and they are communicating at a much higher level, having understood the system better.
Well, Jenny, you lead me into my next question, you know, and it's not necessarily what happens on the field, but the crowd noise and the impact that could play for a young quarterback, that being Spencer Rattler, being able to come up, liking to play a tempo offense. And so if that's going to be the case, you're going to be calling a lot, hand signals, et cetera. Just talk about that impact that could potentially have on this game on Sunday.
Well, you know, the really weird thing is, for as loud as Lumen Field is, and it is incredibly loud and the fans are awesome, Seattle's looking to regain home field advantage. They have not done well winning at home in the last year and a half. They didn't win the season opener against the 49ers. So I know that the fans are going to bring it. I know that the Seahawks are hungry to get this win for the fans. But yeah, going up tempo, it's not just hand signals, right? It's silent count. And I know that penalties have been a problem for the Saints, right? Just kind of making sure that they stay out of their own way. That is really tough to do when you've got 68,000 people and you can just feel it in your chest the entire game. I mean, it is an energy that you can feel. I mean, my ears are ringing for several hours after the game from being on the sidelines. But it is a factor, and I know that Spencer Rattler has played in big-time games and in big-time stadiums. It's just a different vibe here in Seattle with the fans and the way the stadium sounds.
You know, Jen, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And a lot of the times when we've been previewing seasons, we've talked about the year three leap for receivers. And he's entering year three, and he's gotten off to an awesome start, already 17 receptions, which is third in the NFL, 227 yards, which is second. The former first-round pick out of Ohio State. And he kind of did have his breakout year last year, 100 receptions, over 1,000 yards in the 17 games that he played. But talk about his evolution entering year three and what really does make him that true wide receiver one for the Seahawks offense.
I think it's because he can do so much, and he's willing to do it all. You know, he's not just the guy who can run deep. He's not just the guy that could work out of the slot. I quite honestly, when they drafted him, and Tyler Lockett was still on the team, I thought, great, JSN can be that third down slot guy. That way Tyler doesn't have to take so many hits going across the middle. And we didn't really see that all that much. I mean, we have seen it on occasion, but I really thought they were going to lean on him more in that role. Instead, they've asked him to do just about everything. He'll line up anywhere. He'll run anywhere. I think when you see him, you might underestimate him just a little bit because he's not the biggest guy in the room. And we've talked to him about that. But he is so savvy and he is so smooth at making those catches and the contested catches. I mean, he is a security blanket. Part of the reason those yards are there and that he's second in the NFL is because he got all the targets in week one. And that's not the way that the Seahawks want their offense to function. But if that becomes the opportunity, JSN is going to be there for Sam Darnold.
Jen, thank you so much. Seahawks radio sideline reporter. You can find her on X at Jen Talk Sports. Thank you so much and have a great game on Sunday. Have a great call.
Thank you so much. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Jen.
We're going to take a break here, but before I do, I got to tell you about the LSU Southeastern game tomorrow in Tiger Stadium. Start your game day at 2:00 with Mike Dettillier and Herb Tyler and the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show live from Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come out and count down to the big game at Acme with 16 surround sound TVs and the best drink specials. It's a great place to hang out for LSU and college football, all thanks to the good folks at MAP Construction. Then at 4:45, catch the LSU official pregame show. Kickoff is at 6:45 with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester. Tigers and Lions tomorrow on WWL, streaming live on the free Odyssey app. Welcome back to Fans in a Pro as we wind down and head to the Brian Kelly Show at the top of the hour at 6 o'clock. And then at 7 o'clock, we're getting ready for week 3, and we will have our Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup joined by Ian and Coach Lou at 7 o'clock with the most comprehensive high school football show in America. Today we will broadcast live from Archbishop Shaw as the Eagles host Rommel. Coach Mitch, leave them tamales alone. They're right off the highway. I know you be going over there. And then the other big matchups, 35, McDonald 35, at in the car. Coach Danielle, y'all just get ready to cheer right there, because that one, whew, that's going to be a tough one. Alexandria Destrahan, I got a shout out. Charlie, when you talk about Destrahan now, you say Ed Reed or do you say Justin Jefferson? The old school people, are they going to jump right now? Destrahan, I'm thinking Ed Reed. And then, you know, you say Justin Jefferson, Destrahan, that's new school.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, right? Like, you know, everyone, I mean,
in you would my hope.
It knows Ed Reed. Yeah, absolutely.
You
if
would
you're a
hope.
Football fan, you hope that you know one of the greatest safeties of all time.
Yeah.
Jefferson, though, like, yeah, he's so flashy and he's the new school type of guy. So it's a little bit of both for, I think, my generation. But I think if you go a little bit younger than me, everyone's going to know it because of Jets.
Well, we got that game. Alexandria, as they are at Destrahan, St. Charles Catholic at Dunnan. And Dunnan, they have still the number one high school quarterback.
Yeah, correct? Elijah Haven.
Elijah Haven. And I know there was a rumor at one point that maybe he was heavily leaning towards Florida, but I don't think that is necessarily the case. And I don't know. I think it was a rumor anyway.
Yeah.
That was kind of put out there. But Elijah Haven lost last year in the championship game.
Correct.
Lost last year, but still one of the top, five-star recruit, one of the top quarterbacks, not only in the state of Louisiana, but in the country. Then we have Jesuit at Bonneville, De La Salle and St. Paul's. That's PJ's Coffee. That's all you got to say. PJ's Coffee, St. Paul's, they go hand in hand. But, yeah, get ready for the Friday Night Lights, the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup presented by Acadian Companies and Dr. Pepper today from 7 to 10:30 only on WWL. So I want to talk a little bit, Charlie. I know we got a few minutes here to talk this Saints matchup as far as the Seahawks are concerned, and a couple things that I think that the Saints have to do well to be successful in this game. One, it's a tough matchup just because of their strength is probably one of your biggest question marks, and that's just because you haven't been great. I think you've been okay. I don't even know if I would give you good up front. I think you've been okay up front. But the strength of Seattle has been their defensive line. And as Jen talked about, even though – you've got new guys on the back end. You may have three new starters. They may have, if the Saints are an 11 personnel, they may have three new starters on that back end. The question will be, can you block it up? Can the Saints block it up to be able to exploit the back end of the defense? And so I looked at it a couple of different ways. You can say, hey, I'm going to go heavy personnel, and most of the guys up front, every guy will be double teamed. So you may only be sending three guys out on a route, and if that's the case, you got to get open. But you shouldn't be getting beat because every guy is being doubled, you know. And so you can do it that way, or you can kind of say, okay, I'm going to move the pocket a little bit and give my quarterback 2 to 3 options. When I talk about half to field opportunities, you have to be able to do a little bit of that. And then the other thing that I think that you can do is when you talk about playing this game kind of a side-to-side standpoint, is being able to get my guys in space. Yes, you can try to attack them vertically as far as up and down, but I think that if you can make these guys have to tackle in space, particularly if they're backup players, yes, they've played special teams, but it's a lot different when you talk about I am the starter and I also have to play special teams and I have to go and make a tackle in open space. I think the Saints have to be able to exploit all three of those options, and it's just on offense. Defense, you know, that's a totally different situation. But just from an offensive standpoint, take care of the football and attack those secondary guys in space, whether that's moving the pocket, whether that's the big play element of taking some shot plays down the field. But you've got to make them make plays in one-on-one situations.
He may not be as well known as some of the other premier corners in the National Football League, but Devon Witherspoon, Deuce, is a premium guy.
Yep.
And Mike McDonald, obviously the defensive mind, comes over from Baltimore and really starts establishing that defense, as we had talked about with Jen at the back half of last season, once things really started to get going for them, and it's really rolled over on into this season. Him being out is a real big deal. Kind of like what you were just mentioning with all the new faces that you'll probably see in the Seahawks secondary. But like we said, if that offensive line can hold up, you can take advantage of that. However, they're going up against some pretty ferocious names on that Seahawks defensive front. So we'll just kind of have to see how they kind of hold up front.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm not leaving them in a lot of one-on-one situations. That's the thing. Yeah. I'm going to make sure that, hey, I have, you know, four eyes. I have four eyes and we're chipping out, you know, and even sometimes you're not even getting out.
Right.
I mean, because I have to be able to secure that pocket. We're going to pay some bills right quick. Deuce McAllister, Charlie Long on Fans in the Pro. Thank you so much. Been awesome here on Fans in the Pro. I want to thank Charlie Long and Diane, I hope you got some rest and no one bothered you today. We'll have the Brian Kelly Show coming up and then the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup. We're headed up to Cortez's place up in Seattle. Saints, Seahawks, 3:05 on Sunday. It's been great. Be safe, New Orleans.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.